You know, every time you do the Skype sound, I hear the Klingon War theme from Star Trek The Motion Picture.
That should be the Skype ring, really.
It should, yes.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, this will be a test to see if I can... Oh, okay, I got a link. Because remember, I wasn't getting pictures the other night, Paul. So.
Yes, I do. Must have killed your porn habit.
No. No comment.
No comment till the time limit's up.
All right, so we ready?
Whenever you are, sir.
Okay. Hello, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, where we are going through every episode of Deep Space Nine in painstaking detail. You have entered into a world where the inmates have taken over the asylum, as I am Gene Hendricks, the listener. I am joined by the producer, Mr. Paul Spataro.
Hello.
The Englishman, Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
The Englishman, I'm telling you, it was the Englishman.
And the person not able to watch this episode, Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hey, everybody. I finally got back across the quadrant from Deep Space 69. Unfortunately, there was a horrible, horrible transporter incident to where Alvin and I were merged. But I don't think there was any long-term effects. So, but I didn't get a chance to... What... Sorry, I coughed there. I didn't get a chance to watch this episode either, but I promise I'll get back on things next time.
Verbal.
Anybody got any fish? Anybody got any fish or anything? I'm hungry.
Stay away from the dog.
Later on, you're gonna see Bill walking up and down next to the couch, rubbing himself against it.
My wife would shoot me. She's like, "That's the new couch."
You're leaving fur all over it.
All I'm picturing is Bill in the garage clinging to the screen door.
The door won't last long.
Has anybody gotten any new Star Trek news in the last 5 minutes?
No.
Can't say I have, no.
Yes, Frontier Communications might become the final frontier in Tampa if more people don't get their internet back. There's a lot of upset people yesterday. But anyway, let's hop into the show. Enough about my communication problems.
All right.
And my internet. Sorry.
All right. So I'm gonna read the next Bible entry.
Go for it.
Dr. Julian Amoros. Human. Male. Mid-20s. Rank of Lieutenant Commander. May have an accent, depending on casting. He is fresh out of Starfleet Medical, graduated second in his class, a brilliant specialist in multi-species medicine. He arrives on DS9 with gung-ho expectations about adventures in Starfleet. He's naive and charming, and cocky, all at the same time. He's chosen this remote outpost instead of the cushy job he was offered at Starfleet Medical because this is where the action is, where heroes are made, in the wilderness. Dr. Amoros is still wet behind the ears and has a lot to learn. He is the antithesis of Kira, who is streetwise, sadder, but wiser, cynical. She gets impatient with someone who thinks he knows it all, but in fact doesn't. In time, she will come to realize that when it comes to medicine, he really does know it all. Sometimes she's a little tough on him and Sisko has to pull her back. As a man who has seen combat, a decorated veteran of Starfleet duty, O'Brien represents an ideal to the Doctor. But O'Brien looks at the young Doctor as a serious liability to the officers of DS9, and is worried that his inexperience could get them all killed one day. Dax is very protective of Julian. She's seen a lot like him, sees herself as a mother figure, although she appears about the same age. Julian, like so many other men on board, has a crush on Dax. Julian greatly respects Sisko, but is terrified of him, is anxious to live up to the commander's expectations. Sisko is amused by Julian, very patient with him. The Doctor reminds him a little of himself when he was starting out, ready to conquer the universe. And that's the description of Dr. Julian Amoros. Clearly, once they cast the role, they changed it a little bit, but I think initially it is a pretty fair description of the way he was presented. I seem to remember, and we didn't do it, but they had the crossover episode on DS9 kind of introducing him before this went on, and I think he talked in that episode about being where the action is and all of that, which makes me think of the guy that Lieutenant Uhura put in the closet in The Search for Spock.
You know, Mr. Adventure.
Mr. Adventure.
Yeah, I am glad that clearer heads prevailed and they didn't make him a lieutenant commander, because a naive lieutenant commander makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think they did as much with the Kira relationship as is written in the Bible, and I don't think they did as much with the Dax relationship as is written in the Bible. I think they were pretty true to it with O'Brien, where basically it starts off with O'Brien kind of being disdainful of him, but then as it goes on, they develop a relationship, and then he kind of mentors him, and then they just become close friends. And there's also, I think, the Sisko thing is kind of true. I think Sisko kind of gets a kick out of Bashir's naivete. What's that?
Sisko gets a kick out of terrifying him.
Yeah, well, I think he gets a kick out of how naive Julian is, and kind of plays him a little bit. I mean, we saw that with, I'm trying to remember which episode it was, with when he sends him off on like a mission. You know, it's kind of like a fool's mission, but sends him on it like very seriously.
Yeah, it was the one with Loxana, because Bashir was in charge of all the other ambassadors.
Right, right.
And so, Commander, why are you doing this to me? Because it's fun.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't think they, like I said, I don't think they varied off the Bible as far as the early scripts go. But I think as time goes on, they've let the character develop, and now he's changing from that, because I think they found that as originally written, he was just annoying. And they wanted him to be a character that the Watchers would like. So they had to change him around a little bit. But otherwise, I think they were fairly consistent.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, the Bible for this so far has been pretty spot on.
And once again, we can thank Chris Tyler for the Bible.
Thanks, Chris.
Oh, you mean the Deep Space Nine Bible? I was going.
No, no, the Bible. You didn't know that?
I don't know that I'd want to read Chris Tyler's Bible.
The Bible according to Hero.
it'd be like The Wolf of Wall Street, wouldn't it? It would be very entertaining.
Exactly.
And if we're lucky, you'd have Margot Robbie in it.
I think I would want to read the Bible by Chris Tyler. I just wouldn't want to be a member of that church.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
It's all from Mary Magdalene's point of view, before she met Jesus.
Oh, dear, man.
You're killing Andy here. Stop killing Andy, Hero.
Yes. Okay, well, do we have anything to do? I don't think we have any Star Trek news.
No, we don't have any Star Trek news. We might as well jump into our episode.
We might as well jump into our episode, yeah. Who's doing the... What's, oh, it's Gene, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I got roped into this to do the synopsis. Okay.
Hey, why don't you just say, and I'm setting my stall out earlier, boring Dax episode, the end.
Oh, I don't agree with that. We're going to fight. Kroika!
There you go.
But still, I will have Stan.
Hi, ho, look on here.
Look, you're you.
Anyway, Equilibrium, okay. Huh?
Yes, so the episode we are going to talk about is Equilibrium, which was Season 3, Episode 4, directed by Cliff Bowl, teleplay by someone I'm about to butcher the name, Renee Echevarria?
I believe it's Echevarria.
Echevarria, okay. Story by Christopher Teague.
A nightmare is taking possession of her soul.
Who are you?
Turning Dax against her own people.
Dax! Jadzia!
Now each vision of violence...
They're not dreams.
Actually, they're memories.
...brings her closer to the truth.
I'm afraid we'll have to remove the symbiont.
But that'll kill Jadzia.
...and closer to the brink of death.
She's in neural shock.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Plot. Jadzia Dax begins experiencing unsettling mental problems. She suddenly remembers a melody and can even play it on a keyboard despite never having done so before. She snaps at her friends and is disturbed by the anger she feels for no apparent reason. After she is overcome by a hallucination in which she is cornered by a masked, robed figure, she pays a visit to Dr. Bashir for help. He detects critically low levels of the neurotransmitter isobromine, the substance that allows the Dax symbiote to live within Jadzia, its current host. Bashir and Commander Sisko rush Dax back to Trill on the Defiant in hopes that the medical staff at the Symbiosis Commission can help her. One of the experts on the physiology of the joining of the symbiote to the host, Dr. Renhall, administers some medication that might stabilize Dax's condition. While she waits for her neurotransmitters to return to normal levels, Dax visits the caves of Makala, a place where Trill symbiotes swim in pools carefully and lovingly tended by unjoined Trills called Guardians. As soon as she meets the Guardian Timor, he can tell what's wrong with her. He tells her that her hallucinations are actually memories of a previous host. This is confusing to her because she has access to all of the memories of her hosts, and these scary flashes are not from any host Dax ever had, to her knowledge. The Defiant's computer has meanwhile identified the melody that was haunting her earlier. It brings up a biography of its composer, a Trill man named Joran. When Jadzia sees a picture of his face, she experiences a strong hallucination, has a seizure, and collapses. When Dr. Renhall examines her, she says that if there is no improvement soon, Dax will have to be removed from Jadzia, which will kill her. Trills value the symbiote's life over that of the host. Sisko and Bashir begin an investigation. The Guardian, Timor, seems to be less than open with them, and computer files regarding the musician Joran have been deleted. They finally track down Joran's brother, who admits that Joran murdered a physician and was then killed. Joran had been joined to the Dax symbiote by mistake after he had been deemed unsuitable to serve as a host. After the incident, all records in regards to this joining were deleted, and the affair was covered up. Dax received a memory block so that the hosts would not remember anything about Joran. The memory block was beginning to deteriorate in Jadzia, causing her symptoms. When Sisko and Bashir notified the Symbiosis Commission that they have discovered the cover-up, Jadzia is released from them instead of having her symbiote removed. They are now aware of a great secret underlying Trill society. Most believe that only a very small percentage of Trills are physically capable of joining to a symbiote, when in truth, roughly half of them are potential hosts, and it's the Symbiosis Commission that selects the ones who will receive the limited number of symbiotes. Dax pays one last visit to the underground symbiont pools. She enters a pool, and the symbionts help her assimilate Joran into her mind with all of her previous hosts.
And they all lived happily ever after.
Ha!
I mean, I just... you know, Andy's already gone on record very quickly as to what he thought of this one. And there's certain things about it that I don't like. I'm not going to sit here and say this is a great episode, but I found it to be fairly entertaining and somewhat gripping. I was sitting there watching this, and it kept me, you know, I had no memory of this from the first time I saw it, and I probably only seen this one once before, I'm guessing. But I was sitting there and trying to figure out, okay, where are they going with this? This is, you know, I found it intriguing. And the ultimate solution of it, while dissatisfying in the fact that there's always a government plot under everything, I found it to be, you know, that it made sense. And, you know, I think to some extent this is why this series went against the Gene Roddenberry model, because every society has got its dark underside, and it gets exposed. And I think Gene Roddenberry's model was, no, it's just a, you know, it's a great big happy world, or a happy universe. So it does go against that thought. And I do dislike the fact that, you know, that they, you know, everybody's shown to have ulterior motives and everything's covert and all of that stuff. But I still found the episode to be fairly entertaining.
Well, I kind of remembered this one, since obviously I didn't get a chance to rewatch it, but I just didn't know where this was going to come up, but I knew that there was a thing with the Trill hosts, with the symbiotes, that a lot of people could get them, and that this really isn't a dark conspiracy. I mean, the conspiracy is that they covered up, that they really gave it to the wrong person, or that they didn't take the time to figure out, you know, whether, just because you can be joined to a host doesn't mean you should be joined to a host. And maybe, you know, now they have the selection process in place to determine if someone is mentally stable to receive a host, because it might be hard to integrate all these other memories and things into your mind. So this, I'm kind of neutral on this one, because nothing sticks out, but I did remember in my mind, you know, that this happened, and this is obviously where it took place, and I'll shut up now.
Well, this one was, after the House of Quark, it was kind of a letdown, really. I mean, it's not that I didn't enjoy the episode, it's just there were some things in it that, it's like, since when did Bashir become a computer expert? It's almost, again, like in the last episode, it's like this was supposed to be another character, but they gave it to Bashir just to have him on screen. You know,
it's almost like he's some type of advanced being who can just do things.
It's more like the original series, where this is a episode where we need McCoy to be stupid. In this episode, we need McCoy to be smart in this one particular field. You know, they're using him as the utility player in the cast, and it doesn't quite fit. And something else that struck me is, why is it always the Dax symbiote? I know, otherwise there's no story on this, but we've had someone come onto the station and forcibly take the Dax symbiote. Now we have the wacko composer had the Dax symbiote for 6 months when he wasn't supposed to, and they covered it up. How many more weirdness is going to happen specifically to the Dax symbiote? I mean, can't we have another Trill show up and that happens to them?
Well, I guess just from a storytelling point of view, is the thought that you're not vested in a different Trill, so you wouldn't care. I mean, that's the only reasoning I can give it. Yeah, this does seem to be, you know, I watched the show Blue Bloods, mm-hmm. And what I'm amazed at is that what's his name, Donnie Wahlberg, solves every major crime in New York City. And I guess this is akin to that in its own way, that every significant event that's happened to a symbiote was the Dax symbiote.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I do. There is a convenience or a coincidence level to that I can't deny. But just the same, I still, you know, I enjoyed the episode.
I wasn't looking at the clock wondering when is this going to end. It's just I took more notes on this episode than the House of Quark simply because, you know, I was looking, like, in the beginning when Sisko's cooking. I actually had to write down a note that it might help if Sisko or Odo was actually whisking rather than moving the whisk kind of in the vicinity of the bowl.
Yeah. I like the Great Bajoran Bake Off at the beginning. I think that would have made for a more fun episode if they just had the hosts come on and this is a TV show. And it owes to all of Bajor. It's one of the top rated television shows and Commander Sisko's entered the competition. That would have been a brilliant episode and cheap to produce.
This time on Bajor MasterChef.
Oh, the Great Bajoran Bake Off's new season begins with Commander Sisko joining in. This was quite a coup for us to get Commander Sisko to join this show because he's normally very busy. He's going to teach his station's chief of security how to whisk badly.
What is today's secret ingredient? Warg!
See, I'm thinking of the Klingon version of Chopped, where when you lose, they literally chop your head off.
The secret ingredient is Soylent Green.
It's made of symbiotes. Ah,
that could have been your last act twist. There you go. We've just rewritten this episode. It's much better.
Oh, no. The symbiotes use us for food. Use us? use the Trills for food.
Oh.
It's not a symbiotic relationship.
No, it's a dark,
well, it's one thing about the symbiotes since they were introduced on TNG is they have changed significantly. I mean, initially, the symbiote was totally in control of the body, and the host's mind would kind of be submerged.
Yeah, because they did that. Well, are you saying that because of the one where it was the one that took over Riker?
And that's the one where they introduced the Trills
he was just thrown in there. It was like a last-ditch thing to save the symbiote, so...
Yeah.
What?
But they did have it, basically, that the symbiote was in total control. Because then when they found the new host body...
Right, but that may be because of his physiology.
Body, and the symbiote was still in total control. It wasn't just because Riker, you know, wasn't a Trill.
Although this episode does retcon that episode in... Because up until the first two seasons of DS9, it's been, well, if you take the, you know, the symbiote and put in an unusable host, they'll both die. But it didn't work that way with Riker. So this goes back and basically says, oh yeah, well, they can last, you know, up to 6 months, not a problem.
Yeah.
So that's why Riker didn't die and didn't kill that symbiote.
Again, we're trying to remember an episode that I did not watch in preparation for this.
Yeah.
But didn't they have a thing in that episode where they had said Riker would only be able to hold the symbiote for a short period of time or it would kill him?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. But if you look at everything that they had said on DS9, it's you put the symbiote in unsuitable host and within a few days both of them will die.
You put the symbiote out, you take the symbiote, and you shake it all about.
You do the symbiote pokey, and you turn them all around.
That's what the Trills all do. Bringing a little of the Back to the Bins song nature to listen to the Prophets.
Now, I've got another thing this is probably my own crazy headcanon.
I'm sure.
And from books. Hey! Sorry. So, all the Star Trek books I've read, I want to say that there was a book, unless this is, like I said, Bill Crazy Head Canon, that there was the symbiotes were actually akin to the Season 1 Next Gen. Remember the symbiote-like creatures that had taken over Starfleet?
Oh, yeah, the conspiracy.
Right,
yeah.
That they are actually, like, warring factions. I wish I could remember. I just don't remember. Is that ringing a bell with any of you guys?
Yeah, it does.
You're lying. I know you. Don't lie to me.
Louie, I know you.
Swear to me.
You know what? I found interesting in the beginning of this episode is you get a callback more, well, at least in my mind, to everyone's favorite episode, Move Along Home. Because if you remember in that one, Dax was basically saying, well, if you were injured, I'd leave you. And that's more or less the attitude she has when she's, you know, sniping at people in the beginning of this.
That's true, no? Yeah.
It's just... Yeah,
I think the sniping is presented as her being unstable, as opposed to her true personality.
Or was that the Juran personality asserting itself in season one?
That's a good way to look at it. It's certainly a good way to retcon it.
Because that particular piece of that episode doesn't fit with the Dax we know the rest of the time. So, you know, I'm going to no prize that one.
Yeah, no, I think you have a good point.
And why am I the first one to bring up that during the medical scan in the infirmary that the cinematographer really, really liked zooming in on Jezia's breasts? It's like, we're going to track up here, boobs!
I didn't look at the credits, but I'll assume we have a male cinematographer. But she might be just as enticing to a female cinematographer, too. I don't know.
Of course, that brings up when she goes into the pool at the end. Michelle was watching with me, and she just turns to me and says, oh, it's cold water, huh? Because my wife knows these things.
Why did they take the Defiant? Isn't the Defiant supposed to be protecting Deep Space Nine from possible incursions by the Dominion?
And unless it's otherwise
convenient.
Given the
plot of the last episode. Well, yeah. The plot of the last episode was everyone has left because they're afraid of an incursion by the Dominion. But hey, let's just take the Defiant on this mindless journey to Trill. Well, what was wrong with the runabout?
They had to prove that they actually had repaired the Defiant from the search. Because it got the hell blown out of it in that one.
It did. Yeah. Do we have a lot about this one?
I got nothing.
I watched it and I got nothing.
The only other thing I had written down was that the masked, I'm guessing, Juran in the hallucinations, he looks like he would be more at home on Doctor Who.
Wait a minute, he's a masked composer? What is he, were they doing a Phantom of the Opera riff or something on it?
The Phantom of the Opera is here.
Inside your mind.
Actually reminded me of Hexadecimal on the animated series reboot, because he kept switching masks for facial expressions. And I'm the only one that gets that reference.
You are. Sorry.
It's on Netflix. Watch it.
I have so much on my Netflix queue. I'm still only 3 episodes into Daredevil.
I have 1 episode of Daredevil left. I couldn't watch it last night. I couldn't watch anything.
I haven't seen any of season 2 yet.
Well, I'm 3 episodes into it. What's funny about it is I think I'm frustrated because I've only gotten to watch 3, and yet I think Dr. Bill is jealous of me because I still have that many left to go.
I've watched all of them, and it's fantastic. And I'm following it up with Agent Carter, which is also fantastic.
Yeah, I have Agent Carter all on my DVR ready to go.
And Supergirl this week was also fantastic.
It was.
I would say that you're underplaying it with Supergirl this week, because I think it was more than fantastic. It was awesome.
It was very, very awesome.
Well, there was one DC Universe team up that came out this week that we all like.
Yeah. Save your money. Don't go and watch 2.5 hours of a maudlin soap fest and watch Supergirl the Flash instead.
Of course, people are listening to this in January of 2017, so it doesn't really matter.
Save your money. Don't buy the DVD / Blu-ray of a 3-hour. And watch Supergirl Flash on, because that'll be out on Blu-ray by this point, won't it?
Probably.
Aha! Anyway, I found it. I found it. This, I just went on Memory Alpha Wiki. It says the parasites, because I was reading for the one for that episode, for the next generation. It says the parasites have also returned in pocketbooks, new DS9 series of novels, first in The Lies of Dax, in which blah 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 blah.
Something else happens to Dax Symbiote. Yeah.
Yeah. Audrey Dax and Christopher Pike discovered that the parasites are closely related to the Trill. The last book in the Mission Gamma series then picks this up, leading into the novel Unity, in which it is revealed that the Trill symbiotes and the neural parasites have been fighting a long secret war with several species worth of hosts and governments as their weapons against each other. The parasites' latest gambit has been the continued fervor for Bajor to join the Federation. For unknown reasons, this would represent a great victory to their secret plan. This story arc is completed in the novel Unjoined by Andy Manglis and Michael A. Martin, in which the parasites are revealed to actually be genetically modified Trill symbiotes created on the remote Trill colony of Curl. If you watch The Walking Dead, a deadly plague had been killing symbiotes and the experiments were intended to develop a cure. However, the experiment failed and the symbiotes, so affected, became violent and xenophobic. The parasites. And swore revenge on Trill society for this disaster.
Revenge.
In the Star Trek Online bonus episode, What's Left Behind, it is revealed that the parasites were bioengineered by the Iconians as a way of controlling the Vaduar. And I knew there was something else about the Trill and them, so there we go. I am justified. Well, no, not really. I'm not that good of a character from that show. But
you are not Raylan Givens.
Yeah.
No.
But I'm justified in my crazy headcanon was not wrong. I just couldn't access it.
Theoretically. You know what? You know what I think? I think everybody listening right now is saying to themselves, what would Blaine say?
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Me too.
So I'm going to tell you what Blaine would say. Hi, all. We have another episode focusing on a non-human character, which is nice for fleshing out the universe. Again, the series will come back to revelations from this week down the road. As much as we learned more about the Trills from this, I would like to see a serious examination of an alien race that didn't uncover deep, dark secrets. Really, has any race but the Ferengi stood up under scrutiny? Cliff Bull knows how to direct Trek and does a functional job here, but I found this to be somewhat bland. That may be because my fond memories of DS9 are from the heavily serialized storytelling that comes later, and this year, where that simply doesn't exist, yet fails to grab me, because it's not what I'm looking for on the repeat viewing. Blaine. That's all fair. It's kind of similar to what I was saying. Everybody's got their deep, dark underbelly once they start examining them. And it's funny that the Ferengi, who are kind of considered the least honorable of all, is the only race that hasn't happened to.
Because they wear their greed on their sleeve.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Cliff Bull also directed the conspiracy episode from the first season of Next Gen. Coincidence? I think not. I think it's a conspiracy. That's what I think.
Very good.
Anyway, do you want to rate it?
All right, you go first, Gene.
All right. Well, I don't think this was as good as the other three episodes this season, but to quote Michael Leyland, it's all right. So, I'm going to give it a 3. Yeah, you know, it's not horrible. It's not great. It's all right.
I am, as always, again, incomplete.
You are incomplete.
You mean Alvin doesn't complete you?
No. Paul completes me.
You complete me. I really need a new co-host. So I also gave this a 3. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it kept me interested throughout the episode. I do kind of agree with Blaine's thought of, you know, can we look at a race without ending it with aha? But I found it entertaining, and I did feel vested in it. And, you know, the criticisms that have been given, I think, are all meritorious. You know, everything happens to Dax, and every race is evil. But just the same, I enjoyed watching the episode. I thought the acting was fine. I thought the story was okay. And, you know, it wasn't great. It wasn't horrible. And I gave it a 3, which would make it my lowest rated episode of this season so far as well.
I'm giving it a 2. It neither entertained me nor kept my interest. I liked the teaser. I thought that was great, the pre-credits bit. But, no, I found this one a massive chore. Sorry.
No, there's no need to be sorry.
It's your opinion.
You know, yeah, you can be wrong anytime you want, Andy. It's fine.
That seems fair enough.
Believe
me, we got
time
to read a couple of emails?
Believe me, he'll always tell you when you're wrong.
Yes, I've learned that from listening to Back to the Bins.
But I do respect your wrongness.
He will fight for your right to be as wrong as possible.
Captain, incoming message.
We have a decent number of emails, the first 3 of which are from this fellow named Gene Hendricks.
That idiot.
Perhaps Gene would like to read these.
Which one do you want me to read first?
Well, I guess the oldest one is Kill Them All. It's the only way to be sure.
Okay, let me find it. It's in here somewhere. There it is. From January 29th. Okay. Kill Them All. It's the only way to be sure. Paul and Andy. Sorry, Bill. I didn't know you were on the show then.
It's okay.
I'll say this for Armageddon time. The twist of both sides being in league to kill the scientists was refreshing over the now only our side has the weapon blah-ha-ha-ha that we usually get with this kind of story. It's a good motivation, but once they're found out, they try and politely ask to kill 2 Starfleet officers, which is really, really dumb. I want to know what kind of repercussions there are from this. Something tells me that the Federation is not going to be too thrilled once they hear about the attempted murder of 2 of their people who were on a humanitarian mission. They were not on a mercy mission this time. Not that I want to see the Federation embargo debates, but I'd like to know what did happen. I agree with Sean's point that the O'Briens are a quote-unquote real married couple with all the problems, etc. Also the fact that Keiko thinks that she knows all of her husband's habits, which leads to the rescue, but actually doesn't know him as well as she thinks she does. Of course, that's helped out by some great acting by Rosalind Chow. Yes, the we can't go anywhere because they'll find us is a bit weak, but since it leads to some good character moments, especially for Bashir, I'm willing to overlook it. This whole episode felt more like a play put on screen than anything else, since it had a set number of sets, minimal exteriors, and more character development than action. Of course, since I enjoy those kinds of movies, 12 Angry Men, Arsenic and Lace, The Lion in Winter, I'm okay with this kind of feel every once in a while. Gene. P.S. Yes, I would like to hear the compare and contrast between the series Bible and what actually happened, which is what you guys are actually doing.
Good. Well, we're glad
are we supposed
that you
to respond to this?
if you want. I mean, it's your
show. I think you should just come on every week and read your own emails, because that was brilliant.
I do find to, you know, not to... I hate saying nice things about people.
But especially when
it does go against your nature, doesn't it?
It does. But I do find that more often than not, Gene, when you send an email, I agree with it to the extent that it's like, okay, what Gene said there makes sense, and let's move on to the next email.
Because I put way too much thought into these emails.
But that's the one thing, is I don't want you to think we're dismissive of your emails, because usually I agree with them, and I think they're right on target.
Well, I'm not
stay
gonna
on target.
Regardless. Shall I move on to my next email?
You might as well, which I believe is I Think I'm a Clone Now, which is one of the better titles for an email that I've seen in a long time.
Yes, and this one begins, Andy and Paul. Maybe it's just me, but rather than have this elaborate ruse to keep Faux Brian out of everything, why didn't they just lock him up?
That's funny.
This is punny Gene Hendricks at his best.
I have no idea what I was doing that day, but I was in rare form. Yeah, if they were wrong, it would have been embarrassing, but what if he had killed someone in his attempt to escape? Heck, they had someone who they thought was an undercover agent in the same quarters as a little kid. Of course, that would have made the payoff at the end not work as well, but it's the more logical way to act. That isn't to say I didn't like the episode. The acting was good, and Colm Meaney does a good job with the paranoia ramping up during the whole thing. Plus, as Andy said, it was really good twist at the end that flips the meaning of everything that's happened so far. Still, it's an alright episode. Not great, but not horrible. Gene, email hack extraordinaire.
Yeah, and the host of the Hammer Strikes podcasts, the Hammer podcast, the Quantum cast, Anime Freaks, and there's something there about a Tutu Freak Amazon link. I don't think we've ever mentioned that.
Well, because you have this... Well, just go to the Two True Freaks page and click on the link. I just made a tiny URL of it. tinyurl.com/TTF-Amazon.
Yeah, buy your stuff through there.
Yeah. But just as far as that email goes, I totally agree with you. The fact that they kind of let him run wild, for lack of a better term, was really a plot... convenient thing to do, as opposed to what they'd probably do if this were real. But it's one of those almost I want to turn my mind off to that because I did find it to be an entertaining episode.
So, yeah, it was a very Manchurian Candidate kind of episode.
Yes.
Where you don't know exactly what's going on, but it, you know, you really want to watch it, and then you see the ending of it, and it's like, okay, well, now... next time I watch it, I really know what's going on. And luckily, since it's been so long since I've seen these, I didn't know the twist at the end until I saw the twist. It was great.
The same is true here. I did not remember the twist, and I think we discussed that we were caught off guard by it.
Mm. I just listened to the episode that, you know, your guys' coverage of it, and I don't even remember the twist now. And you, I think you made a comment about how, you know, you might not remember the twist. Oh, that's right. Okay, now I just remember. Yeah, okay. Sorry. It just came to me. But yeah. Oh, God. I think I'm still affected by that transporter accident. I don't know. No. This is normal. I think I'm actually back to normal where I normally am now.
Can't blame the transporter anymore, huh?
Yep. Yeah, that's it. It was a transporter accident.
I think we're good for maybe one more Gene Hendricks email.
Okay. This will be the Welcome to Paradise one?
Yep.
Okay. Subject, Welcome to Paradise. Would you like some Kool-Aid? Paul and Andy, this is a long one, so settle down. Just this once, I'd like an ideological Let's try that again. Just this once, I'd like an ideological argument over whether colonists on a paradise planet should leave their simpler lives and come back to the Federation. All we have so far in Trek is either an outside threat that means the colonists must move or die, or a Jonestown-like cult situation. Oh, I have no problem with there being conflict, but the simple fact that no agrarian colony shown in any Trek is capable of just living peacefully on their own is wearing thin. Where are the space Amish?
I was just going to say, where's the Amish planet?
It would be a great episode if they took the point of view arguments out of this episode and crafted an episode around that, with neither side having ulterior motives or being forced to do something. One quibble I have with the technology, you know, all that made-up stuff, is the way O'Brien found the field generator. If a simple magnetic compass was all it took to find it, why didn't the engineer, aka the last convert, think to do it? It seems like it would be the first step in trying to get your ship working again. Find and eliminate the outside influence preventing it from working. I also think that Starfleet needs to update their SOP, which is standard operating procedure for the uninitiated. How about, if you can't detect anything on the surface or communicate down there, and there are only two of you, then either only beam down one person or leave a marker and come back with more people. Don't beam down the whole crew complement. Of course, if they did that, we have no episode. All that being said, I loved the acting in this episode. Everyone on the planet turns in a good performance, but Avery Brooks, again, was great. I was reminded of Al Guinness in Bridge Over the River Kwai when he walks back to the box. The Kira and Dax scenes were pretty decent as well, especially the stuff on the runabout. We got to see, again, that Kira is the excitable jump-in-feet-first type, and Dax is the calmer, let's-think-about-this-for-a-second type. Plus the, I'm the science officer, it's my job to have a better idea, is a wonderfully delivered line. Like you guys, I don't remember the rationing of water, except in the scene where Sisko can have the water in if he changes out of his uniform. Gene.
And once again... Yes.
I just like listening to you read your own emails. I think that's great.
So what you're saying is that I have to write them and then record it and send it in.
Yeah, and then just drop by.
Well, if you're not going to be on the episode and you want to send us a soundbite, that's fine. I'll edit it in.
I'm usually listening at work and then type the email as I'm listening, so it's kind of...
Okay, no, I have no problem reading them when you're not here. But when you're here, there's something to be added to it by you reading them yourself. It's like you sent me a soundbite.
Because I know the intent of what I wrote.
Exactly.
And the next email you get from me is also going to go on about you shouldn't beam down every single person on the runabout every time. Just because it sticks in my craw.
It does make sense. Well, on a runabout, though, you only... How many people can you fit on a runabout?
Well, there are four chairs in the command section.
And there were four people who went on the Jem'Hadar episode.
Mm-hmm. You know, that sounds like some type of like Starfleet Academy prank. You know, how many cadets can you cram into a runabout?
But also keep in mind that Sisko, in this episode, the one that they emailed about, not the Equilibrium, he specifically says, we have room enough on the runabout to take all of you. Because
I don't think that's accurate. I hadn't thought about that, but I don't think you could fit, because there were like 30 people.
Yeah, well, in Jem'Hadar, they're specifically told that they have living quarters in the back, because that's where Jake goes to show Nog, hey, let's go put the luggage back here. And that's where they take in... Later on, that's where they put somebody.
Well, have you ever gone fishing on a small charter boat?
Well, my dad used to have a boat that had a cabin on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you go into the back, and there's like a very very small room with like two bunks in it.
Right.
In my mind, that's what you have as the living quarters on a runabout.
Yeah. Well,
it's not big enough to have rooms.
No, it doesn't have rooms, but it has to at least have four bunks, just because there are four chairs in the command area. You would think that there would be enough bunks for the people that are running the ship.
So all four of them go take a nap as the runabout slams into the surface of the world that they're orbiting.
Well, it's not going to run into anything else in orbit, because so far we haven't seen anything else in orbit except in the one episode where it specifically has a space station. Even Trill has nothing in orbit around it.
How sad.
That would be the limitations of the special effects budget.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is.
No, they're just in a special orbit reserved only for ships.
Yeah, okay.
It's a special orbit. It goes on the short starship.
Right, it's called
the other
runabout.
Side of the planet, yeah.
Great, the runabout is a short bus. I'm never going to be able to unthink that when I see it from now on.
I'm just going to stop before I get in trouble. Before I offend. Stop me before I offend again. That's what I do.
Okay, well. Andy, what are we doing next time?
Next time on an all-new episode, Kira is kidnapped by Cardassians and informed she's actually an undercover agent in Second Skin.
Sweet.
Akira episode.
Look forward to watching that one. In the meantime, see you all in 2 weeks.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I didn't get a harump out of you, Gene.
Harump.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine Podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.